Welcome to the She Speaks Sport podcast, proudly elevating women's sport and sharing athlete stories in their own voices. Join us for empowering conversations and a front row seat to the stories that deserve to be heard.
Today, I am super, super excited and so happy to have alongside me on the podcast, Charlotte Henshaw, and joining me all the way from the UK today. And she's such a special and such an incredible human being. And Charlotte, before I do a little bit of an introduction to you and about you for those who are listening, I just want to say welcome to the show today. It's really cool to catch up with you. I know that you are getting back into training and you have some jam-packed days today and this week. So it's really, really cool. But otherwise, how have you been doing? And welcome to 2025 as well, right? So how have you been doing?
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, crikey, it's been such a bit of a whirlwind, actually, post Paris. It was my fifth Paralympic Games, so I'm very used to that period post games where everything feels a little bit strange and there's downtime, there's kind of lack of knowledge of what you might do moving forward, but it never gets any easier. And so this time, the fifth time round, was just as challenging. And, you know, I had some downtime from training, which I really appreciated. But that kind of gives you a separate set of challenges, because I was so used to having my daily routine kind of prescribed for me. So when I was all of a sudden let out into the world and I had all this time that I got to decide what I did with it, it was really quite challenging. And so I kind of saw through the end of 2024 in that way. And then I knew that going back into training was the first focus of the new year. And so we're 3 weeks in and it's a bit of a shock to the system. And it's a challenge sort of psychologically to get back into that place of pushing yourself every day. But, you know, I'm hanging in there and hopefully the cold weather in the UK will be over soon, because that's not always the nicest either.
My aunt was here from the UK. She was here for 6 weeks and she just left and arrived in the UK, and she lives in Milton Keynes. And she was like, I cannot handle how cold it is here. Like, I live here, but I'm still not used to it. Like, I'm freezing. Can I come back? So it was so interesting to talk to her, you know.
Maybe, when I was swimming, one of the years, I think it may have been the year of the London 2012 games, the January, we actually came over to South Africa to do some training in the January. Because of that reason, it was cold, it was dark, and everybody was sort of on a real low point. So we came out to train in the sunshine outdoors in January, which was a real novelty. And my birthday's just gone, and so I very rarely get a sunny birthday, and so to be in South Africa for my birthday and have a beautiful sunny day was a real treat for me. So I can understand your aunt not wanting to come back to the cold, because I felt very much the same when I've been over in South Africa in the winter.
Oh, that's just stunning. I'm so glad that you were here, you know, before. Yeah. And a belated birthday. I my closest friend's birthdays are in January. So I think January people are the most amazing people. Not just saying that because you're with me, but happy birthday. I hope that it was an amazing one. I do see some of the British athletes, like Jasmine Sawyers. You know, she's here busy training at the moment. So I see some of them actually are doing that as well. They're lapping up the sunshine in South Africa. They've left the UK behind. Not making you jealous or anything.
No, like, I know. I need to get some canoeing to come over to South Africa. We need to sort of set up that connection, because we don't have that, and obviously it's difficult to transport boats and things when you're in a sport that requires a lot of equipment, so it's not always the easiest. But that would be the dream, to set up in a warmer environment for the winter so we can escape this cold weather.
Well, I hope you can make that happen. There's a lot going on. I know it's not the same. I know canoeing and rowing is not the same, which is what I was going to say. But I mean, there's opportunities there. You never know what can happen. It would be so super cool. And so now you mentioned swimming. So now if someone's listening and they're like, who is Charlotte? They're going, okay, she swims. Now she's talking about canoeing. What does she really do? She does a little bit of everything. She's so phenomenal. And obviously you started off in swimming and competed, you know, in the games in swimming as well, and did really, really well at swimming. But really, It's been a phenomenal, amazing journey for you into obviously para canoe. And I want to say that you've been the 10 times world champion, the 3 times Paralympic champion, and the first ever double gold medalist in para canoe at the Paralympic Games. And not only that, you're also the only double gold in para canoe. And you know what? It's the first ever Paralympic champ in women's VL3. That's not the only thing that you've done. You've done so much more. But I mean, we're just going to be focusing on the last year of your life. Obviously, Paris being such a highlight, such an amazing, amazing journey for you. And your motto, obviously, going into Paris was be courageous, which I love personally. Tell us a bit about, I mean, these wins. I mean, you've written history not only as a woman, but also at the Paralympic Games in para canoe, you've written history and made this a phenomenal reality, not only to look back on for yourself, but also for us to look back on as well and to celebrate. Tell me a little bit about, 2024. I mean, the whole year and leading up to Paris. Did you have a good feeling about it? Did you have that sense of, okay, something's going to happen here for me? Did you prepare for that, or was it just Or did it just unfold? Was it a process?
So, I mean, 2024 was my most successful year of my career to date, both in canoeing and in swimming. So, coming over from swimming, doing 3 games as a swimmer, and then coming over to canoe, I'd obviously been successful leading up to Paris. I'd won silver and bronze in the pool, and obviously won in Tokyo when I'd switched over to canoeing. But when the new VAR event, which is for people that don't know about para canoe and know the ins and outs of it, it's basically the para version of the kneeling canoe. It's come from a sea craft that we've kind of turned into a racing boat. And so that hadn't been in the Paralympics for women in my classification. It was the first iteration of that this time round. And so when I'd heard it was post Tokyo that that was coming into the games, it allowed me to kind of really focus on splitting my time between two boats and race for 2 medals, which I've never really had the opportunity to do before. I was a breaststroker and only a breaststroker in the pool, so I did the 100 breasts and that was it. And so to be able to have 2 bites of that cherry in Paris was something I really, really was grateful for. And so that meant that in those 18 months prior to the games, I was really taking that other boat seriously as well. And so coming into 2024, I knew that we got a world championships. I knew that we got obviously the Paralympics. So, when I sat with my coach at the beginning of the year, I said, wouldn't it be amazing if I could go and win double gold at the world championships and double gold at the Paralympics? Never for one second, thinking that that was it's never a foregone conclusion in sport, but I have some very tough competition from both my own teammates and people from around the world. So to finish 2024 as double world champion and double Paralympic champion was the ultimate dream for 2024. And I'm just so grateful that I was able to do that. And like you said, do all those firsts, be the first woman to win double Paralympic gold, be the only athlete in the Paralympic world to win double gold in Paris from the canoeing. And so all of those things, it's not lost on me. It was really, I just appreciated that I could have the opportunity to go and do that, and thankful that I executed it the way that I wished I would.
So beautiful to hear you actually speaking about it as well, and to be reflecting on it, because I think in the moment, right, when they put in the medal around your neck, it's surreal, isn't it? But now you've had time to kind of really process it, and how do you feel now? Like it's a reality, and in life, it's amazing when we're set a dream, like you said, it was like, hey, you know what? What if we do this? What if we win that double gold at the World Champs and then we go do it at the Paris? What if we do that? And it's incredible when it comes together. I mean, there's so much that goes into it coming together, right? And so much in that. But now that you've had time to reflect on it, obviously, is there something unique perspective that you have on having achieved this just recently. I mean, I know that Paris was a couple of months ago, but it's still very fresh. It still feels very fresh. We're still talking about it. It's incredible. And have you had time to reflect on that?
I have. And actually, weirdly, it wasn't the sort of positive post Paris that I thought it would be, you know, achieving, like I just said, that ultimate dream. And I kind of figured I would come back and everything would be rosy. And it really hit me hard that, you know, that was what I was working towards. And then it was all of a sudden finished. You know, I had the second gold medal put around my neck at probably maybe 1 p.m. Paris time. I was back in the UK 24 hours later. And, you know, just that was it. Because we were on the last day of the games, that we went straight to the closing ceremony, straight to home, pack our bags on the train back to the UK the next morning, late morning. And so, you know, within 24 hours, I'd gone from having this incredible experience to sort of sitting back at home going, did that actually just happen? There was a real kind of shift from one day to the next. And that was really difficult. And I think you hear a lot of athletes speaking about it, is that post games blues, if you like, that they come home from this amazing experience and they feel down and they feel depressed and they feel a bit unsure about what to do now that that big thing is over. And that's very much what I felt this time around. And so I kind of knew it was going to come, because it's happened after every games that I've been to. I've had some form of sort of low afterwards, and so I was able to prepare for it as best I could. And I think, you know, that's something that, you know, athletes do speak about a lot, but perhaps the wider public aren't that knowledgeable about, and they don't realize the real shift of emotions that goes into that from day to day. And so I thought that was a really interesting sort of post games come down, when actually on the outside of it, it was such a positive experience. And I think on the flip side of that, I've had the opportunity to reflect and think really positively about it, aside from the fact that, you know, I'm sitting here with two Paralympic gold medals, you know, in my house from Paris, and that's amazing. But I think you alluded to it a little bit when you were asking me the question, and you mentioned that my motto was be courageous. And that's something that I come up with my sports psychologist that I only started working with, believe it or not, 10 weeks out from the games. And that was a really, we have a canoeing psychologist, and I'd worked with him and still do, but had got to the point where I really needed something new going into this games period, because I knew that there would be a lot of pressure on me from both outside and myself. And what we'd been doing with somebody that I knew very well hadn't been powerful enough anymore. And so I needed to go to somebody that completely just didn't know me and had a completely objective view of what I was coming to her with. And I found her in July, I think it was. We had our first meeting, and we kind of worked really, really hard for 10 weeks. And, you know, I was always somebody that was quite overwhelmed by the pressure that I put on myself to perform. And, you know, we worked and we were like, what would it be like if you went into this competition with, you know, less fear and more courage? Like, what would that be like if you could go into this really pressurized environment where you're perceiving that there's a lot of pressure on you? What would happen if you just went and was brave, and brave enough to put yourself out there and to enjoy it and challenge yourself to enjoy it? And I'd never been able to do that before, and I did. And it was that real reminder of, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Can you be brave enough to just let the work that you've been doing for so many years just come out in your performance and not feel weighed down by expectation? And I have to say that I enjoyed Paris probably the most that I've ever enjoyed a competition. And I know that that's probably very easy to sit here and say when I won two gold medals, but I had the best time, and I felt probably the most relaxed that I've ever felt. And that came out in my performances. And so to be able to reflect on all of that process with a bit of distance from the competition, and I think, I don't often say that I'm proud of myself, but I think I'm the most proud of how I conducted myself around that environment and how I was able to kind of make that change. Aside from that, you know, the medals, that's almost irrelevant. It was a fact of how I approached it, and I did what I wanted to do in terms of my mindset, and that was the biggest reflection I've had in a positive way, I think.
Wow. I think you mentioned so many things that for me resonates on just a personal level as well. You know, the pressure that you put on yourself. I find with people in life, yeah, people in life that I always think are, you know, people that are high achievers or perfectionists or people that put a lot of pressure on themselves. But it's almost so hard to carry that pressure, isn't it? You know, there is external pressure.
It is.
But it's the ones and the thoughts and the emotions and the realities that we place on ourselves that's often the hardest to carry. And it's the because it's up against ourselves, we're up against ourselves. And you mentioned that, and I think that that is something that I can understand why it is something that you were so incredibly proud of, how you conducted yourself around that pressurized environment, around everything. Yes, people can think it is about the medals, and that is fantastic, and it is awesome, you know, to reflect on that. But really, I think the self growth and the self awareness and the step up within yourself, that I can totally understand why you would feel so proud of that. And it is, I want to ask you, you know, when that psychologist says to you, you know, what would it look like if you go in and, you know, obviously, like your motto was be brave, and if you be courageous, and if it were just being brave and courageous and going, hey, you know, this, if I have this courage and I just go for it, and, you know, yeah, what's the worst that can happen? Which is a good question to ask ourselves, actually, because we don't, right? On the
No.
other side of that is often like, oh, what if I fail? You know, what if I.
Yes.
And that's the stronghold almost that we're up against with ourselves. How did you manage, if I may ask, to be able to go, well, actually, well, obviously, I mean, you worked with someone and it was, you know, just before Paris and going there, but how were you able to actually get into that calm mindset to be going, hey, I can have courage, and how it worked out, you know, because that's sometimes so much in our minds, isn't it? It's our mental health, it's in our hearts. How did you manage to do that, if you don't mind me asking? Now we
Of course not.
letting us into
No,
this.
I think it's really a really valuable reminder to people, not only in sport, you know, in anything, in life. That fear of failing and falling short of what you expect or what other people expect of you or what you know you're capable of. And I think that was the thing for me is. The beauty of sport is you can, you know, nobody has a right to that gold medal more than anyone else. It's a clean slate every time you step on the field of play. And, you know, it didn't matter that I was coming in as double world champion. It's a completely new set of races and a different environment. And so I had no right to those medals more than anyone else. And so there was a real possibility that what I knew I was capable of, because I've done it before and I'd done it 5 months before that might not happen this time. And I really had to wrestle with that. It's a real possibility that you may, inverted commas, fail at this. And, you know, what would that mean for me? And I had to dig deep and go, again, another question that my psychologist made me ask myself was, so what? If this happened, so what? What's the worst that you're thinking? And quite often, you know, you think of the worst thing and it invariably doesn't happen. I thought, you know, I would never get over it if I, you know, I didn't do X, Y, and Z. But when I actually thought about it, the reason that I thought I would never get over it is it was boiling down to the fact that I thought I would have let other people down and that I would have not fulfilled the expectation that other people have. And you know, we got to the point of thinking, well, if these people that I'm supposedly letting down feel that way about the fact that I haven't managed to win a canoeing race and they're feeling that upset that I haven't done it, does that really matter to me? Do the people that actually matter to me, my friends, my family, my loved ones, are they going to feel that way? They might be disappointed for me, but they won't be disappointed in me. And ultimately, they're the people that matter. They're the people that I care about, whether they think that I'm a failure or not. And if they wouldn't think that, then what was I scared of? It was about What I and for me, you know, there are worse things that could happen. That, like I just said, you know, my family and friends not supporting me is far worse than feeling a bit disappointed in myself that I might not have won a race. And ultimately, it was about searching for what was actually important to me. And of course, sport is predominantly, you know, the majority of my life is based in and around sport, and the decisions that I make day to day is around how does it affect my sport. But it's not all of me. It's a big part, but it's not all of me. And so if I happen to fail, you know, then that's okay. I've put myself out there. And also, I'm trying to be better at recognizing the things that I've done before. Like I said, you know, just now, I'm not very good at saying that I'm proud of myself. I'm also not very good at reflecting of what I've done. And I think there's a real fear sometimes of people being proud of what they've achieved in the past, because people don't want you, people, you don't want to think that you're being complacent, and you don't want to think that you're living in the past. But it's okay to also acknowledge that actually what I've done with my life, whatever that may be, that's pretty cool, and no one can take that away from you. And so whatever comes now, you've already achieved those amazing things in the past, and so be proud of them and use them to kind of bolster that kind of feeling of confidence. And that's what I try and say to, you know, when I go into schools with, you know, with kids, and they get so caught up in what's about to happen, and they don't think about what they've already achieved. And that's an amazing thing to sort of have in your back pocket when you're feeling a little bit doubtful. I don't think it is just being complacent. I think it's about using the skills that you've acquired and the achievements that you've acquired to kind of push you along that journey and sort of lift you up along it. And so I think I've got better at that most recently, which, you know, I'm hoping to be able to continue to be better at it. I'm not perfect by any stretch, but it's certainly a valuable skill, I think.
Oh, I love that you shared this with me and with everybody listening as well. I'm so grateful. And I just feel like you're also sharing it with me, because I think as individuals, I mean, I needed someone like you to come into school when I was young to be like, listen here, you know, because as a perfectionist, it was always so difficult to look back in my school journey.
It's hard. It is hard. And like you say, you know, being a perfectionist is, it's not always a good thing, because you're never happy with what you're doing, and you always think you could be better. And that's the mindset that I've tried to come into this new season with. You know, I have achieved everything that I ever dreamed of in sport. I want to move into this next phase of my career enjoying the fact that I get to do sport for a living. And yes, of course, I want to continue to do well. I want to be the best athlete that I can be until I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be bogged down by every day beating myself up about not living up to a ridiculous standard that I'm setting myself. And so some days it's okay that it's not perfect. Probably most days it's not going to be, if you can ever get to perfection. And I'm trying to be better at just being happy with what I give on a day-to-day basis in training, with whatever it is. And sometimes just, you know, saying to yourself, that's all you have today, and that's fine. Like, don't beat yourself up because you're trying to live up to this standard that you're probably never going to reach.
Exactly. And I think it's something that we can even take for life. You know, some days are better than others. Some days are,
absolutely,
it's like, it's okay to not be okay. And then you wake up and you're going through the day, and you're like, oh my goodness, today doesn't feel great. Like, I'm not feeling great, and I can only manage to do X, Y, and Z. And sometimes I have this, and this leads me into the next thing that we're going to talk about, because I wanted to really talk to you about this. And obviously, you know, you've been super resilient in health adversities, in living with endometriosis, which you've been very open about, and which you share about, and which you're comfortable sharing about. And obviously, I mean, we're talking on podcasts, which I know is listened to by mostly women, and but we do have men that join us, so shout out to them as well, so they can get educated today.
Absolutely.
But I live with, you know, PCOS, and now as I've got into my late 30s, suddenly have developed perimenopause, which I didn't even know was a thing. Suddenly you get it in like your late 30s, because they're saying that we're getting it younger now. And it just completely kills your life. I'm sorry, like, hormones are just some days it works, and then other days you don't work. So it's horrible. So tell me a little bit about that, because endometriosis is incredibly painful. It's a huge challenge. It takes long to get a diagnosis often. It is so intense. I have friends that have it, family members. People who do not experience things like endometriosis, or even, you know, when they get into perimenopause, when they get into polycystic ovarian syndrome and your hormones are everywhere and your body is not great. But you're showing up in sport, right?
Yeah.
In this.
Yeah.
I mean, talk to me a bit about that, because sometimes with this, I mean, your body just doesn't feel like it even belongs to you, because it's just doing so many things. So
it's been a tough road, but it's part of the reason that I wanted to be so open with my diagnosis. And I don't have a huge platform by any stretch. There are, you know, sports people that have much more of an influence than I have in my little corner of the world. However, when I was going through the process of being diagnosed with endometriosis, it took, you know, I was a stereotype. It took me 8 years to be diagnosed with endo. Yeah. And so that's the average, which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But it took me that long to get answers. And it was through sport that I managed to get that. I was referred to a female health physio because of pain that I was getting. And she was the one, really, after many, many years of investigations through the more traditional medical route, she had experience with endo and in her family. And she said, you know, what you're saying to me sounds like you've got endometriosis. And as soon as she said that word, I kind of went away and researched it. And then when I next went to the doctors, I said, you know, I think this is what it is. And I found a gynae specialist that agreed with me. And, you know, obviously, wrongly, at the minute, the only way to diagnose endometriosis is through surgery, which for an athlete, when I was about to, it was in the year leading up to the Tokyo Games in 2021. And I, you know, made the decision to have surgery because the pain that it was putting me through and the mental anguish that I was experiencing, because I didn't know what was happening to my body and I was in so much pain, and I was starting to question whether I was making it up, whether it was just all in my head. And that was more detrimental to my athletic career than actually having a surgery and taking time out of training to go and get this surgery done. And so we decided that that was the right way. I was diagnosed with it. And in the lead up to me having the surgery, I didn't really have anywhere to turn in terms of other athletes that had been through the same scenario. And I found an Australian para swimmer and one of the British Olympic cyclists has also been quite vocal about her experience. And you know, they were so generous with their time. They rang me, they were messaging me on Instagram and gave me amazing advice for somebody who was wanting to go back and do high level sport after this surgery and whatnot. And so I thought, you know, if I could do that for somebody else, whether that's in sport or outside of sport, I wanted to do it. And so when I shared it on my social media, the amount of people, I can't tell you, who reached out to me, DM said, I don't know if this might be what I have. Oh, I know somebody who's, you know, it was way more common than I thought it was. And I thought, gosh, if no one's talking about this and it's this common, then we really need to change that. And so I don't know what it's like in South Africa, but in the UK, there has been quite a big shift to talking about women's health issues in general, but particularly in elite sport. And I think that that's obviously a step in the right direction. There's still a lot more that we can do and there's a long way to go. But there's definitely been a shift of the dial towards being open about talking about menstrual health, about all those things, because, you know, people don't talk about it. And if we don't talk about it, we can't understand it. And so it's been a huge sort of crusade of mine, I guess, to kind of make sure that people become as comfortable as they can be in talking about things like that, because it's only going to benefit people.
And I'm so grateful that you are as well. And I've seen a lot of things that I get is from the UK, like women's sports stuff that comes to me is
Mm.
actually from the UK. So I love hearing what's happening in South Africa. We are getting more comfortable talking about these realities, but not so much has been done in sport yet. I mean, it is coming out of the UK, which is good because there's a lot of people in South Africa and a lot of people involved in sport in South Africa that actually is connected to what's happening in the UK, and obviously research coming out. And I severed my ACL in 2006 during, sport and playing competitive netball. And now reading certain things that research that's been done and, different times of the month with menstruation, how it's connected to ACL injuries, how we've seen that is being pioneered. And I'm going, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense to me. Why didn't I know this, back then? And it is amazing to me that we are doing that. I'm super grateful for all the women, and there are guys, but a lot of women and
Absolutely.
organizations that are pushing it, and is so much feeding out of the UK, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm also grateful that like you said, this is a crusade as well for you, because we need to have these conversations. And also, I believe in sport, we need to have these conversations. One of the things I read about when it was during the Paris Olympics, it was just something that I saw quickly. They came up somewhere that said over 40% of the female athletes that were competing have polycystic ovarian syndrome. And for me, I kind of felt like, okay, I live with that. So I kind of felt a little bit more comforted in a strange way to go actually releasing this statistic out of Paris, and I'm watching these women, and it felt like kind of emotional for me, because I'm like, when you have any kind it's of like problems as a woman, it's really difficult, and you can feel very alone on the journey. So that's why it's important that you've been speaking about endometriosis, and obviously people also then reaching out to you, and maybe we'll reach out to you after they hear our conversation as well, to go, maybe that's what's going on with me, maybe. And it's so important that we have that conversation. And so it is good.
Absolutely. And
It's
we can
so
learn from each other, and
good.
some things that I learned so much from people that have kind of reached out to me, and even things like things that help them, or things that they've said to their medical practitioners that have either hit the mark or haven't quite hit the mark. And what people need to go to the doctors armed with. I went with a load of information about tr that I tracked my menstrual cycle so that I could show them patterns that were occurring, because I hear a lot about the medical or lack of medical support for people with speaking for myself, endometriosis. But I always feel a bit bad about bashing doctors, because they have such a hard job to diagnose things like this, because there's not the funding to make sure that we can have more effective ways to diagnose it. There's nothing that they can't see inside your uterus or your abdomen by just sitting at the other side of a desk. And of course, they're not going to send everybody to go and have a surgery. They've got to kind of play that sort of law of probability of what's the probability that this person might need this surgery. And so I think that the more information that you can go to the doctors with, it helps them to make a more accurate diagnosis, which hopefully the more that we do that will lead to faster diagnoses of these things. And I think it definitely, talking in terms of sport, you mentioned the ACL sort of research that's been coming out, I think particularly because we've had such a lot of it in women's football. I think that of course we should be thinking about what effect women's bodies and women's hormones have on their physicality. And in sport we talk about marginal gains, the things that can help us get the extra percent, tiny little percentage, and yet we've traditionally overlooked, women's health and the effect that it can have on those things. And so, if we're looking into, how effective sleep can be, how your recovery is, what you're eating, the time of day that you train, all the science around that, it only makes sense to me, surely, that we should also be thinking about all these things that can have a huge impact on female athletes. And so I'm really glad that we're starting to get to the point where even if it's just a conversation and the thing isn't happening yet, but even talking about it potentially happening is further down the line than we've been before. And I think we can be really heartened by that. And hopefully the more athletes that come out and talk about it, and the more, supportive men that we have that encourage these conversations, I think the better it will be for future women and for future athletes. Absolutely.
You know, it's crazy to think that in, years gone by, it's like you said, we're thinking of eating, we're thinking of recovery and sleep and, psychology, but we're not thinking of women's health in terms of sport. I saw something just last week that said how much research has never been done on menopause, female menopause. And that's something that awaits everybody eventually one time in their life. Well, not everybody, all women, so not everyone, but you know what I mean? We're gonna get there, and there's no research that's actually been done in it. So it's still like something that they're gonna now try and raise money for and to invest in to do research. And I was thinking, like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. It's 2025. We're talking about this now, but it's important to talk about. And Charlotte, I wanted to ask you because I know now we're almost like, getting to the end of our conversation, which I feel we could have,
Yes, we
such a
could.
long conversation. It's so cool. I wanted to ask you. Just like if you could do like a sh like if you had to say, I know that you met his Madge.
Yes, I did.
Was the experience?
It was always so surreal. I'm fortunate enough to be invited to Buckingham Palace a couple of times because of the games, and to we met His Majesty after the Tokyo Games, but it was still very much sort of COVID restrictions and all felt a little bit strange. So to be able to go and meet him this year was amazing. It's always a real privilege to go into that world, even if it's just for an hour or two.
I love this actually, just it's so cool. So I had to ask you about it. And I also wanted to ask you, I know that you said that one of your heroes was Natalie du Toit. And because I'm South
Yes.
African, I have to ask you about
Yes.
that.
Oh my goodness. Natalie was, I mean, I think for anybody my age, I've just turned 38, and I was around at the time that she was swimming. My first games was Beijing, and I remember seeing her around poolside, and she was just the most incredible athlete, the nicest person, and just the ability to her swimming ability was beautiful to watch for swimming geeks like me who love to see beautiful swimming. She was absolutely textbook, and she was a powerful woman that it really paved the way for athletic figures, I believe, in sport. She, the big strong shoulders and really powerful and looked amazing and kind of gave all us the confidence that, gosh, we want to look strong and we want to look powerful. And then obviously she goes to the Olympics and competes alongside able-bodied swimmers. And I just think what she did for Paris swimming and swimming as a whole was just incredible. And I massively looked up to her, and I used to get really excited to kind of see her around poolside and watch her race. And so I thought she was brilliant, and I'm just grateful that I got to be around her at her, at her peak. It was really inspiring to watch that.
Did you connect with her, like chat with her, like interact with her a bit?
No, I never did because
Oh.
I was kind of a newbie, and I felt very kind of like, oh, I don't know whether I should go and talk to her. And so I just admired from afar and have continued to do that. And maybe with the beauty of social media, I should reach out to her and just say how much of an impact that she had on me as a young swimmer. Because it's always nice to hear that. So maybe I will do that. But yeah, never plucked up the courage to speak to her in person.
She's such an icon in South Africa as well, and I
I'm
think that
glad.
she we just we celebrate her. And I think as well, I mean, you and I are very similar in age, so I mean, I wasn't even involved in swimming, or wasn't even involved like in sport as you were, but I also watched her from afar and would see her on the TV, and we just got to witness her. And I don't know. It's you described it so well, but I almost had that feeling myself, like as a young person, like watching her and going, look what she can do, look what she can achieve. She just always seems so strong and so beautiful, so powerful, and just radiated that. And she is such a living icon in South Africa. We celebrate her so much. And she's also often come out and spoken about her journey with mental health and depression and things like that, and she's been so real, and so people have connected with that on such a deep level. And I think today we just also still celebrate her, so it's really cool to hear
Oh, I'm so
looked up
glad
to
to hear that. I'm
her.
so glad to hear that. And because obviously there's a small group, I would imagine, of people that know her over here, but I'm glad that she gets recognized in her home country. And still, I believe she was very much involved in the Paralympic movement. I saw pictures of her around in the Paralympic Village when she was in the Athlete Council and nominated for that and things. And you could tell that she was still very much passionate about para sport even when she kind of hung up her goggles. And it's really nice to speak to you, because I have not only of Natalie, but when I got a bit more confident in my place in the swimming world, when I was a bit more mature, a lot of the South African team we would speak to quite a lot. We were always really friendly with them, and we had good times with the South African para swimming team, and there were some really amazing characters. So I have fond memories of connecting with the team from your way.
Oh,
Yeah,
that's
really
so
nice
cool.
memories. Yeah.
That is so cool. I just think that South Africans and people from the UK we just get along somehow. Like we don't know. We just have that. But it has been so good, Charlotte, to speak to you. It's been so good to connect with you, to just hear about your life and your journey. You just radiate so much, goodness and openness about so many things that we need to talk about, and I'm just so grateful for that. And of course, I know that you said earlier on, it's hard for us to be proud of ourselves, but I really think you have every reason to be proud of yourself, as much as
Oh,
what
thank you.
others look at you and feel pride for you. And I just celebrate that for you as well, and all the best for your where to now with 2025, and what ha is going to be happening, and how you work that out, and just
Thank you.
everything that you're going to be doing. I hope it's that it's going to be an even better year somehow in so many ways. I don't know
I hope
how.
so. Yeah, no, I hope so. And thank you so much for asking me to connect with you. I've really, really enjoyed connecting, and hopefully, we'll stay in touch. The beauty of social media, there's many, many pitfalls to it, but the beauty is you can connect with people from all over the world with common interests. And it's just been really nice to connect with you. Thank you so much.
Ah, it's such a pleasure. And we definitely will stay connected. And also, when you come to South Africa to do rowing or canoeing, not rowing, but canoeing, or you never know, when you come on holiday, then
Maybe on a holiday. Yes, that would be
that
amazing.
would be really cool. No, you have to. No, you have to now.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Charlotte, and take care.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the She Speaks Sport podcast. Find us on your favorite podcast app like Apple, Google, Castbox, and Spotify. Subscribe and like to stay updated on all new episodes. Thanks for listening.